We'd like to welcome you all to the Highland Planning Commission meeting for August 27th. And we are going to begin with an invocation of Chris, and then we'll do a Pledge of Allegiance by Trent, if that's right. Okay, we'll continue there.
Heavenly Father, we're very grateful for this beautiful day and that we live in such a quiet, peaceful part of the world where we can choose to do what we want. We thank thee for the crunchy leaves and the beautiful grass. And we are so grateful for our neighbors and our friends and that we live in such a wonderful community. We ask thee that thou wilt help bring light to our minds tonight, that we would be able to understand and entertain differing opinions and to value them. We express our deep gratitude to thee in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have some consent items, and the first one is the approval of minutes from the last meeting for June 25th.
Is your mic on?
Pardon?
Is your mic on? Sorry, we had a recording wasn't great last time.
So I'm sorry.
To remind everyone to get on their mics.
Okay. Our first consent item would be the approval of the meeting minutes for June 25th in 2025. Is there any approvals?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the meeting minutes of the 25th of June, 2024.
Yes, 2024, correct. Right. Because it says 25, but you're right. We are in 2024.
I second that.
So Claude seconds that. Thank you very much. All right. Is there anything that you would... that you would like to share with us before we move on?
Vote.
We go to vote.
We do need to vote.
Yes.
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 All right. And we all agree it is 2024. Thank you. Okay.
Rob, well, the only thing I'd like to share is I do apologize that I forgot to... I was very excited about getting my meeting posted all correctly, and I forgot to actually tell you all about the meeting and give you the agenda as it was finalized, so I do sincerely apologize for that.
It was on the website.
We all could have just called you.
That's true, but I also, I'll do better, make sure I send out the notice on the Thursday. I sent kind of a heads up of what we're going to be talking about, and then I just forgot to send you the actual packet of the specific staff information.
And that was actually really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, the stuff was there.
We'll be trying to do that more.
Perfect. Okay. Anything other than going to the Action 3? All right. So we have a public hearing ordinance, text amendment HB 476. About the WaterWise notice and other things. We're going to do A and then B, but we're going to have that explained to us first. So, Rob, we're turning that over to you.
Thank you, Chair. So, HB 40, or 476, House Bill 476, amendment to state law that was passed by the legislature this past year, has kind of a few tweaks to a lot of state law regarding land use, some of which I didn't incorporate into our code because it just applies. There's no need to make a specific reference to it. But there are a few things that I did want to specifically reference in our code. Three items. First is water-wise landscaping. The state says that we can, if we want, require the builder of a new home to inform the first buyer. So home builder goes out, builds a new home in development. Then they tell whoever buys it that there are some, if there are any water-wise landscaping requirements. We do have a park strip xeriscaping requirement. So I thought we could add in a requirement that a developer inform the home buyer that your park strip should be xeriscaped. Any questions on that first issue? Great. The next, as you recall, the end of last year, beginning of this year, we did that whole subdivision change due to state law. They then tweaked it a little bit more in a way that I think ultimately will be fine for the city. The primary changes are that there is a 15-day review period that used to be just for preliminary plats. Now that's preliminary and final plats, just the plat itself, the actual zoning kind of lot division. The 20-day review period that used to be for final plats and the civil drawings is now just for the engineering plans. Doesn't change much for us. We were fine with that. They also clarified that a city can't require those civil drawings to be submitted twice. I think that was probably happening in other cities. We don't really require it, but I did go through our preliminary plat application process to make sure we weren't requiring too much engineering up front and just ask them to give us preliminary information of how they're going to connect to all of our systems and our roads. They also clarified that four review cycle limit where we can only go back and forth four times with the developer, that's just for the engineering plans. We could go longer on a plat, but we almost never need to, so I guess they didn't care. And then finally, it's a little bit nice, they modified how we lose the right to make comments if we miss it on the first round. Again, that's just engineering plans now. So those are the minor changes, so I've just incorporated those into our development code review process. And then on this slide, you can see the code changes, the areas where I've changed it, just to incorporate each of those different things I've walked through. But any questions on those changes, clarifications? Great. And the last change from House Bill 476 was regarding sidewalks. So as part of any development, we require, prior to they can record the final plat, they have to either complete all the public improvements or they have to give us a bond for all of the public improvements. We call it a bond. It's not actually a bond. Cash or a letter of credit. And that's to make sure that if they walk away from the development, the city can then try to complete those improvements for the benefit of the landowner. Under HB 476, they're making sidewalks a separate item. So it's not to be included with the rest of it. And it makes a lot of sense from our perspective. It deals with you have the developer put in the sidewalk as part of the development. Then they have home builders go in and they run a bunch of trucks over the sidewalks and destroy them. And then the city requires the developer to put the sidewalk in again. So this says bond for sidewalks separately, give them a little bit extra time, and let them record plats and build homes without the sidewalks, but the city can withhold certificates of occupancy so people can't actually live in the homes until the sidewalks are done. So it solves, we've actually had this in Ridgeview, it solves the issue of, well, your sidewalks are broken, so we shouldn't issue permits for your building, but they don't want to wait for us to fix sidewalks because then they're just going to break them again as they build again. So it's actually a pretty neat solution. So I've incorporated this into our bonding process as well.
Rob, just a clarification. So the cost of the sidewalk is the item that is excluded separately. It's not, you're not holding the developer hostage for the full bonding.
No, great. We're just pulling the cost out, separately bonding for it. It'll have its own process. Any other questions on this?
Yeah, I have a question on that. So I like that idea, but do we have it written that the sidewalk has to be put in before someone can live in that house? Is that part of the written? Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm adding into the code right now, is that we will withhold right certificates of occupancy so they can't live in the home until the sidewalk in front of the home is complete.
Okay. Can withhold, yeah. I should.
So is the wording can withhold? That sounds like it's optional.
That's what I was.
So under state law, it's optional. And what I proposed in the actual ordinance, and I thought I threw this in the slide, but I didn't. I'll quote it to you. The city shall not issue a certificate of occupancy for a single family or two family residence or townhome until the portion of this public sidewalk to be constructed within a public right of way and located immediately adjacent to the residence is completed and accepted by the city.
So shall.
It's pretty wordy, but I was just copying the state language word for word, more or less.
Shall not.
So I guess what we're asking.
Shall withhold that certificate.
Shall is what we're changing.
Until the sidewalk is done.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Rob, could you clarify something in here? It's the fourth point just above what you just read, where it says the city shall not declare a performance guarantee for a public sidewalk to be in default or redeem such a performance guarantee sooner than 18 months after the date of the performance guarantee is posted.
Yes. So this is straight out of House Bill 476. Mm-hmm. They said basically once someone gives you a bond for a sidewalk, you can't redeem it for 18 months. I think some cities, their normal default time is a year. Ours is actually 2 years out, so this won't change much for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just trying to avoid cities saying, give us a bond for your sidewalk that lasts a year. Oh, you haven't finished your development yet? Too bad. Go put the sidewalk in even though you're not building homes. This is trying to give developers 18 months to get the development done, start building homes before the city could say, oh, you failed to put in the sidewalk. We're going to foreclose your bond and take it and build the sidewalk ourselves.
If it isn't a big development, like a whole neighborhood being put in a subdivision, does this hold homeowners hostage for being able to move in?
Somewhat. I mean, it holds the developer responsible. So they can record their plat and start selling lots while they're finishing the improvements. It just says the homeowners will, you know, I could see a situation where they haven't finished the sidewalk and the developers maybe being a little bit slow, but they've sold lots and people are trying to build homes. The homeowner wants to move in and the city will say, we're not going to let you until your sidewalk is done. Talk to the developer. We also have a bond for it. So, you know, if 18 months has passed, the city could go in and finish it ourselves as well. So there could be a window in there where a homeowner is held hostage. I think the goal is, though, normally we wouldn't even allow building permits to be issued without sidewalks being completed. So in some ways, they're going to get a little bit faster and shorten up the time frame between development and home building. So hopefully it gets a little more streamlined of a process. Now, I'm sure there's some developer out there that'll act poorly and not do it right, but the goal would be it all kind of streamlines through.
If I can chime in here, because Piggy in the middle is doing a development, it's really silly the way that it works now. You pay about $39 a linear foot for a 5-foot sidewalk. You put in a few thousand feet, and you know that it gets approved by the city. You can record the plat. I guarantee you that's all going to get broken, probably 50% of it. And the good builders will just come in, saw cut out about 20 feet. The bad builders will put dirt on it and just drive over it, crack it. And then, so it's just a really silly duplication of resources, even if it's done properly. And so I think this is such a clever, brilliant idea, because you still get beautiful sidewalks, but you don't have the concrete crew. And if you go to 6000 West, you'll see this guys out there right now jackhammering out cracked pieces of sidewalk that have been broken. And so to me, this is a very good preservation of capital.
Chris, what do you think about the time frame that's issued, the 18 months thing? Like, do you see that?
It's really not relevant.
Okay.
Because what most builders will do in Highland, they'll either just post the bond, but the moment you finish the development, you know, you remember that 110% business? So let's say it costs you $1 million to do a development. The bond to the city is $1.1 million. So if we do a moonlight flit and leave, the city at least has $1 million to actually put in the storm drain, the pipes and sewer and all of that. The $100,000 is just a performance guarantee so that once the work is completed and inspected and the city says this is well done, they still keep that $100,000 just in case something, or not just in case, things will break. And so it's almost like an insurance policy later on. But in my case, I'm too cheap to post the bond. And so we have just completed the work. And so we'll never give Highland the $1.1 million. We'll just give them the $100,000. the drawback to the developer is you just have to wait until you finish the sewer and the roads and it gets inspected before you can record it. But from a consumer's point of view, or you know, neighbor, they really don't care. You'll buy a lot today, and then your builder will come and wreck the sidewalk and then redo it. In this world, you'll buy a lot. There may or may not be a sidewalk there. But once your home is built, you'll have a beautiful sidewalk and then you'll move in. So most people don't realize that your sidewalk gets replaced two or three times before you move in.
A lot of waste. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Rob, I have another question.
Yes.
this part where it says the amount of such guarantee shall not be less than 120% of the estimated cost. That doesn't sound like it's a fixed 120%, that number is a little rubbery. What eventually determines that number? And do you anticipate that eventually covering the city's cost to facilitate and administer the bond and then maybe a little extra?
We don't ever hold on to any of this. I don't think Highland has ever actually had to foreclose on a bond, not since I've been here and not in a while. And actually, Chris was talking about his development under our old code. We increased it by 10% to cover. It always costs the city more to do something than it does a developer. So under state law, it's 100% of the estimated construction cost. So we actually require developers to give us their bids, essentially, mm-hmm. for how much it will cost them to do all the improvements. They send it to us. Our engineer reviews it and says, yeah, that looks right. That's all the improvements. Numbers look reasonable. Sign off. Then they give us that money. We ask 10% to cover our administrative costs in case we ever have to enforce it. And then the final 10% is that warranty. So it's always a percentage, but it's based on what the developer says, this is my actual cost to do this based on my bids. Then it gets released. Once they build it out, we inspect it, and then they don't want us to ever collect on it. It costs them more for us to do it than for them just to get the money back, and they fix it themselves. Mm-hmm. That answer the question?
Yes.
Okay.
I know that early on in this bill, part of the hope was that it would help facilitate like market-based solutions for the housing shortage. In your opinion, is this accomplished pretty much just by expediting a lot of these processes and you know making the submissions just more streamlined and simpler?
I don't think this is going to have a significant impact. It's going to save a little bit of money and a little bit of time, mm-hmm. but nothing that's going to change Utah's housing market from what it is. Yeah. But no, I guess it chips away at it a little bit.
I know that was part of the talk at the very, very beginning stages of this bill. And then I didn't follow it or anything, but now just reviewing where it is now and I was scratching my head. I'm like, I don't see that helping a ton. I mean, it's great. I like it. It helps speed things along, but I didn't see where it was. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that go into the housing prices, and for sure, government costs are a part of it. The fees we charge, the time we take, all goes into it, but it is one part of it. So this helps streamline a small portion of it, but doesn't address the overall issue.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if there's no other questions, I recommend that you hold a public hearing and then recommend approval of the proposed amendments to the City Council.
Any discussion amongst Council? Or I guess we're commission, sorry, as we counsel together. Anybody have any comment?
No.
Okay, then let's go ahead and open a public hearing on this, and anyone who would like to make comment, please state your name and address, and we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for coming tonight. You have 3 minutes. Thanks.
I'm Elizabeth Rice, and I live at 6241 West, 9680 North. And so I didn't know whether to stand up at the beginning or now because I'm kind of mixed, and I've already talked to Rob a little bit about this. So, and I sat where you are sitting right now, like 13 years ago. So, and so as I read through this and I read through the law, I'm kind of wondering why we have park strips. I know that, you know, park strips with trees are supposed to slow down traffic. I mean, I know all of that. We've kind of been through that. But in some of these new areas where we've got townhomes, I'm not sure why we're having a park strip. So that's just a consideration. I don't really have a dog in that fight, but I will tell you that in the last, I actually monitor my water with an app. It's called Beehive. And in the last 2 months, when I knew that they were coming to put in the new meters, I've really been monitoring my water and my water use. I sit on a half acre and I sit on a corner, which means that I have a huge park strip, huge park strip. And that's where most of the water either disappears down the drain, and it actually monitors, my app actually monitors how much, how dry the grass is, which areas I need to water more. It tells me that. And it's really amazing because, you know, so in the last 2 months, I've contacted five different groups, Utah Water Association, anybody that I thought might have a grant. So I could replace my park strip with either artificial turf or rock and shut that off. And Highland has either opted out or we just don't qualify because we didn't have those meters. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. Anyway, so putting this bug in your ear as you're doing this, and this is more for new homeowners, and I get that. So this is kind of apples and oranges. But there really needs to be something for more established residents. As far as a grant goes, I'm a better than average grant writer. I have only been turned down once on about 25 grants that I've ever written in my life. So, you know, I don't mind doing that, but I need, I'm a widow, I'm, you know, been here for 26 years, and where my water's disappearing is on that park strip. So it kind of ties in with this, but I just would like you to put that bug into the city council, because I'm already working on the city council trying to get some kind of a grant program, or I don't know what, for more established homeowners to replace some of, and I don't want to replace all my grass because we love our grass, but the park strip is, and I sit in a cul-de-sac, so it's not like I need to slow down traffic, at least not yet, after 26 years. And I can't, you know, I'm just appealing to you because there's at least two city council members that never listen to anything I say. So maybe, you know, if we kind of all understand that this is where our water is going, is on those park strips with this and with the more established homeowners, that I would like to change that, for at least for myself. That's kind of, so does that make sense? I hope that does, but that's really all I have.
I love it. And okay. I actually did bring this up before.
Okay.
Because I had seen it on a trip in St. George.
Yes.
And they use it, there's more people using the sidewalks, and they're a little wider.
Yes.
To accommodate.
They're a little wider.
They're not mm-hmm. right next to the street, and there is no water being lost.
Yes.
There's no reason to dig up that park strip to add rock when it could all be right. Sidewalk, and all the water is aimed towards the yeah. interior yard.
Well, and I'm not...
It makes a lot of
I'm
sense.
I'm not terribly fond. I didn't ask Rob if I could put cement in there, but I'm not terribly fond of rock. But...
No.
But if I cap off... I think I have 15 heads on the park strip. If I cap those off, that'd be a huge water savings both for the city and for my budget. So I just think that's something that you guys need to kind of, I mean, maybe not tonight, but just kind of start to think about and push the city council a little bit.
It looks really nice. It keeps a lot of yard debris out of the gutter and washing right. down into the sewer.
Right.
It's... I think it only has pluses.
Right.
That I have seen.
Well, on two mornings, and this was, of course, when it was like 98 degrees, too. And I went out with my tape measure. I don't know. It was a little ruler. And I measured how much water was actually going down the drain. And I was a little embarrassed. So there's got to be, but I need help. I can't, because I've gotten a couple of bids, and they're out of sight. So, especially since I sit on a corner. So, I just wanted to put that bug in your ear, and that's probably my 3 minutes, but I just really think we need a motivation for people like myself to say, hey, you know, this is, you know, not worth it to lose this much water down the drain. So, and money. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate that comment too, because it also relocates trees that are tearing up the sidewalk that we're constantly having to adjust and repair.
And sadly here.
Well, I don't know if I should admit this in a public forum. I'm sorry, but we ripped out. Sorry.
Yeah. Most of us ripped out our trees because the trees were buckling the sidewalks. And we just didn't want to fight with the city to get the sidewalks replaced. I know that in certain streets like Canal Boulevard, but I drove down there. I don't see a park strip there to put, maybe there are in one part, but on the other side there's not. But where you have trees, generally that slows down traffic. I'm not seeing that on Canal Boulevard. So I don't know if that works, but that's just food for thought.
Also, with Utah being dry, we have to put an awful lot of water on even the trees that supposedly are rooted, which are the ones we should put in a park strip so they're not breaking up sidewalks. But you have to put way more water on them to get them deep root, to get the roots down, way more than we should be putting. Much as I love trees, I get that too.
So I definitely think this is an amazing idea for new developments, and I love that she's saying, what can we do? We've proposed this whole new water-wise zero-scaping, replace your park strip with something that's, you know, low water. And if people could have permission, especially older ones where you're having to repair the sidewalk anyway, that we would be able to do something with a bigger depth and to the edge, get rid of that park strip. I absolutely love the idea. I'm happy I don't have a ton of details on cost and how we would get a bond, but while people are willing to put money into zero-scaping a park strip to conserve water, if they had the option.
Well, it's the park strip that is literally.
Yes.
In my yard.
And it's usually the low point in the yard, too. It's not usually the high point, but anyway, anyone else? Use someone else.
So here's the conundrum. I don't know that anybody would disagree. The problem is who's going to pay for it. And so I think we're all very supportive, but we just have to decide, are you going to do, what else are we going to cut in the city, or how are we going to increase taxes?
What if an owner is willing to do that, but it changes the width of their sidewalk? From the standard, it's going to be larger.
So currently we have a standard sidewalk and park strip as part of our cross section for our right-of-ways. So when someone goes put in our right-of-way, it's a certain width of asphalt, curb, then park strip and gutter. And it's a 4-foot park strip and a 5-foot sidewalk. We don't have any restriction. Well, currently, as Planning Commission recommended, park strips are now required to be zero-scape, so people changing them are allowed to change it to whatever they want. I don't believe they could just concrete over it. We do have standards for sidewalks, but we could certainly look at changing our sidewalk standard, what we require and what we allow people to do with it. That's something I've made a note on here, so that might be something to talk about in the future.
I'm going to talk really loud.
You can't talk really loud. I'm sorry, you need to go to the microphone. Thank you.
I apologize.
Pardon, just one
but,
moment.
But
just
here,
one moment. But, yes? Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's for the recording.
So on the park strip, mine's actually higher. It's still kind of running off. But I, on the payment, this is what I'm after, Chris, is that Highland has opted out of some of these programs. Some of them were too restrictive, which I get. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want Big Brother government hanging over me. I really don't. But we have got to have something. I'm not saying the Highland taxpayers need to pay for it. Maybe I need to pay for half of it or 3/4 of it. But there's got to be some kind of program that we can opt into with 5 different water user associations throughout the state. And I talked to all of them that they said Highland just opted out. And I said, why? And they said, well, they didn't have the meters. I said, well, we have the meters now. They said, well, now they would qualify for this and this and this. So it just, anyway, I don't expect Highland to pay for it.
I don't, because grant, that's what a grant is. There's federal money out there, or state money.
All right, any discussion in council? Thank you for all the legwork you've done. That's great, we appreciate it. Okay, we're gonna go ahead and close the public hearing. And I don't know if anybody has a motion they'd like to make.
I move that the Planning Commission accept the findings and recommend approval of the proposed amendments to the proposed amendment, oh my goodness, of the Highland Development Code.
I second the motion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
All right. Can we get it, please? Yes. Do them in order, please, so that can be recorded.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Okay. Now we're on the action item 3B, and we're going to turn the time over to Rob to explain that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is a smaller update. Just as the planning minister, I've got some random questions of different parcels in the city that haven't been built on, or former common space or open space, or was a UDOT parcel that was never meant to be built on, and they always ask, well, can I build a home on it? And our code has some requirements for non-conforming lots of record, but it was a little bit unclear what that meant and some definitions, so I just wanted to clean that up as I keep getting questions to make it clear when you can build a home on it, and when you can build a home on it, and you have to put in additional requirements. So the three, the amendments basically are, well, I'll just go through it. So it's two definitions I'm updating, and then one kind of connecting ordinance. So the first definition I wanted to touch was what a, quote, zoning lot is. So currently it's defined as a lot created on a legally approved subdivision plat with frontage on an approved city street that is in use by the public. That last section doesn't really matter. We don't care if the public uses the public street as long as it's the public street. So I propose that the lot must be served by an improved city street and utilities. The plat must be approved and recorded, and the lot cannot be designated for non-development purposes. And I give examples in the actual ordinance. Common area, open space, conservation areas. Sometimes a plat, when it's recorded, will actually designate a parcel as open space or not to be built on. Sometimes those end up through the years in someone's private hands and they say, I want to put a home on it. It's like, well, it actually wasn't meant to be a home. So that won't count as a buildable zoning lot. They can go through a subdivision either amendment or a new subdivision plat to change that. But that means they'll put into, you know, we'll review it, make sure it complies with code, and they'll put in the improvements they need to actually make it buildable.
And does that have anything to do with what we went over a few months ago about certain lands will be designated geologically or with runoff or anything like that, that it's not buildable?
Not directly, though it actually could be, I guess. Say you had an area that was designated for like a drainage something, but
right,
we've changed drainage somewhere else in the city, so that's no longer needed. And the city says, well, I guess we could sell off that pond, but you can't just build on it as it is. You have to go and improve it, make sure it has roads and utilities and all of that. So it kind of would apply to it, but not kind of a one-to-one. So that was the definition of zoning lot I wanted to get updated. The other was what a non-conforming lot of record. So currently it defines it as a lot of record legally created but does not conform to current land use regulations. These are typically, they were approved by the county prior to Highland being incorporated, or they just exist as Highland. They were old farm parcels that you could kind of subdivide back in the day without much restriction. And the county has them as record, but they never are part of a subdivision. There was no plat for it. So my proposed change makes it clear that plot of ground, that parcel, has to be legally created and developed in accordance with the laws at the time, or they have to be exempted from it. So if someone recorded a quitclaim deed that should have been a subdivision, doesn't count as a non-conforming lot of record, even if the county records it. And again, it can't be something that was designated at some point for some other non-development purpose like common area or open space. So then finally, this is why those definitions matter. So our current code, that ended up being a little bit small, sorry. But our current code says building permits can only be issued for zoning lots and non-conforming lots of record. So that's why I want to make sure those definitions are clear so we know when we can issue a building permit and when we can't. And so what I propose is also just tacking onto that. If you're trying to build on a non-conforming lot of record, something that was never part of a subdivision, wasn't really designated for development, I'm tying it to our non-conforming lot code that's elsewhere, section 3-209 of our code. And I just copied that code below so you can see it, which just says, if you're going to build on it, put in the improvements. It's a long way of saying it, but you know, make sure if you have a new impact to a lot, put in the improvements like a subdivision. Now, related to that, I want to be clear, this will require public improvements, so curb, sidewalk, gutter, utilities, street improvements, for a new home on a lot that never had a home, so an old lot of record. This will not apply, say someone buys an old, you know, subdivision from 77, and it has an existing home, they demolish it and rebuild the home on it, and it's three times the size. We still won't require them to put any public improvements. From the city's standpoint, there's no new impact to the city. It's still a family living in a single family residence. So anyone who does that, there's nothing new for them. It's just if there's an old lot that never got built on, we'll double check it to make sure it's up to code before we allow a building permit on it for a new home for something that never had a home.
So Rob, I've got an unusual use case, but not out of, it seems quite reasonable. So an existing home, existing lot, no curb and gutter, kind of the old school island situation. They have culinary water, but there's no PI, and they have a septic tank. So at least the way you've described it, that new palatial 15,000 square foot cottage or whatever they would call it, would they be permitted to put in a new septic, or would you force them to connect to the sewer?
That's a little bit, it's very late.
It's a weird use case, but I see a couple.
It does come up, and actually we just dealt with this. We require everyone who is on septic, if you rebuild your home essentially, you have to connect to the city sewer. The city has a separate code that says, and this is under state law, if you're within 300 feet of a sewer line, the city can force you to connect. The city's policy has not been to do that, but basically when your septic tank fails or if you have to replace it, or we try to install a new one, we'll say, no, don't do that. You connect to sewer now. So it comes up with people who demo a home and rebuild it. Or if the county, you know, you're supposed to get county health department approval of your septic tanks. If the county will fail the septic tank, then we'll say, great, you get to connect to our sewer line now. So we have a few homes in the old part of Highland. Bull River is still all on septic. That's a little bit separate from this, but they would still require the sewer. We don't really require PI connections. We don't have too many left that are still on, try to use culinary for PI, but we don't have anything specific for that. Generally, people want to be on PI because it's going to be cheaper than trying to water a lot with culinary water.
Is there any kind of restriction? I'm just thinking about, I can't even think of the street. It's pretty much the furthest... I can't think of the street, but where they have perhaps acreage in front that they're doing alfalfa or something and the home is set back and they're then doing a rebuild and you have quite a distance to connect. Is that still required?
So if their
like
home is
acres.
Yeah, if they're like in the middle of acreage, and I think the rule is the home must be within 300 feet of the sewer line. So that would probably exempt them if they're far.
So that it is 300 feet.
But if they're building a new home that's close enough to the street, we would say connect to the sewer.
Okay.
Any other questions I can answer on this? Okay. We would, again, recommend that you hold a public hearing as this is a code change. And then we recommend that you recommend approval.
All right. We'd like to open this up for a public hearing. If anyone would like to make comment, please state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes. It's now open. Okay, it's now closed. Thank you. Any comment, commissioners? Okay. I think we're ready. Does anyone like to make a motion?
I will. I move that the Planning Commission accept the findings and recommend approval of the proposed amendments to Chapters 10 and 11 of the Highland Development Code.
I second that.
Let's vote.
Yes.
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 Thank you. All right. Okay, I think we have some communication items that we need to cover. Is that right, Rob? Are we ready for that?
All right, first I wanted to let you know, I emailed you about this, but in case you've not been checking your email, we have an opportunity coming up here for some planning training. As part of your commitment as a planning commissioner, you agree to participate in 4 hours per year of professional development in the areas of planning and zoning. You get one of those hours satisfied just by attending all of your meetings during the year, but then you've got 3 other hours left to do. On October 10th and 11th in Provo, the Utah chapter of the American Planners Association is holding a conference those 2 days. If you'd like more information, I can send it your way. I already have. It's in your Highland City email box. I've received word from Sherry, Deborah, and Wes on this. If any of you have the time and the inclination would like to do so, this is a fantastic event. I would encourage you to take the time to do it if your schedule allows.
Do you know what time it starts? Friday or on Thursday?
Not off the top of my head.
We've got plenty of time.
Let me see if I can get that for you quickly. I don't think so. Nope. Do I have it here?
That was Mike.
Nope. That's
which 2 days were they?
October 10th and 11th. That's a Thursday and a Friday.
Okay. Was any of it going to be virtually available?
No.
It's all in person. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll get back with you on that one.
General plan update.
And apparently you did mention in the email that the city would cover the registration.
Yeah, the city will cover the cost of you to attend and transportation there and back. I guess I'm kind of going out of order. The general plan update. We have our first general plan specific event coming up here in September. It is on September 18th at 5:00 here at City Hall in the Council Chambers. It is the first community visioning open house. We've had a few opportunities, other city events where we have mentioned to the citizenry that the general plan update is coming up and done a few things to get some input, but this is the first one where this is the sole purpose of this event. And so it will be from 5:00 to 7:30 on Wednesday, September 18th, here in the council chambers. We encourage you to attend, to help out, get involved, and help build the future of Highland.
Are you okay if we put that out on social media to the residents?
Yeah. The whole point is for the residents to come.
So, yeah. So any of your community sort of Facebook things or Instagrams or whatever. Perfect. Okay.
And we'll be announcing it in the city newsletter and other. We'll be working with our communications specialist to make sure it gets out in all the available channels and avenues that we have for making people aware.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right. I think that completes it. Our next meeting will be September 24th. We've got City Council on the 3rd and the 17th, in addition to the 18th and, the 18th. So we've got those things to look forward to.
I put a little bullet point in there, just so you're aware, our next Planning Commission meeting, the thing I'm going to bring is a lot of changes to the code that don't do much in the way of substance, but try to reorganize the code. So what I'm going to try to do is the land use authority table is a list that says for all of our different applications, which entities review them, which entities review and approve them. So for plats and for site plans and for everything. So it's all consolidated in one place so anyone looking at our code can understand how that works. The same for land uses. Rather than having every zone a little bit different list of different what's allowed and not allowed, have one table that says in R120, R130, and R140, in C1, in the CR zone, and it just lists out which uses are allowed and not allowed in one consolidated place. It's something that's been requested by the council. It'll look like a lot, but all it is removing lots of little references and putting them into one place.
So that's will it be accompanied by a map? Everyone loves pictures.
I can give a map. We can do a map. I'll give you a map.
A map would be awesome.
But just
color-coded map.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. I think anyone like to make a motion to close the meeting?
Actually, if I could just, to Deborah's question about when the conference starts, starts at 8:30 a.m. on Thursday. If you would like to attend, please get back to me in the next few days because registration closes soon.
Where is it going to be?
At the Utah Valley Convention Center in Provo.
Okay.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
I second the motion.
Sure.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like, thank you. We are closed for business.